Blog Talk Radio.
There's a direct relationship between having the businesses and being in prison. Go find see how many Asians you can find in American prisons. You hang up being there. But 51% of your prisoners will be black because blacks don't have any businesses and industries. There's a direct link. Blacks won't practice group economics. Blacks won't practice group politics. If you don't practice, you're setting yourself up. And I told that five-story building, you're setting yourself to get wiped out. Understand the nature of race, which is economics. If you build the first floor, it's economic. Build your businesses and your industries. Control buildings and industry, and put that pulls in your money, and hold that money, and practice group economics with it. Arab and Asian money bounces 12 to 13 times for a lead. Jewish money bounces 18 times. Black folks got to learn how to practice group economics. Black Americans spend every penny they get outside their own community. Then you take the money and the wealth that you get from that first floor and go to the second floor. The second floor is politics. You then take that money on the first floor and you control your politics. Black folk must quit allowing people to tell them to go out and vote. Vote for what? Nobody's going to do anything for black folk in politics. Politics is controlled by money. Major corporations who got the money. That's what controls politics. If you have no money, you have no say-so, you have no benefits coming. So you take your money and you control and you take your money from the first floor, you buy every politician on the second floor. And any politician you can't buy, you rent or lease them to get what you need. Then once you get the second floor under control with the politician, with your money, then you go to the third floor. The third floor is the police department and the court system. You take your money from the first floor and your politics on the second floor and you control the court system and the police department. Then the fourth floor that is media. You then take the money that you generate off the first floor from business and industries and you go after radio stations, TV stations, newspapers, and cable systems so that you can now inform and communicate with your own people. Right now, black folk own and control less than 35 thousandths of 1% of the media in the United States. Out of 12,000 radio stations, black folk own about 75 or 80. That's all. You own no cable systems. You don't have a daily newspaper. You have nothing of importance. You got about one black TV station. So you can't communicate with your people. You can't inform your people. You can't do anything. You can have Rush Limbaugh and all the rest of the guys talking about racism all day long and bad-mouthing you. And O'Reilly, they can call black folk all kind of names all day long. What are you going to do? You can't respond. You can't communicate with your own people because you don't have an economic base. 51% of all the prisons in the United States are black people. You only make up 12% of the population. That's no accident. It's because you don't control the economics and the politics. And they're going to go after the weakest people they can get their hands on to incarcerate them. That's the black folk. And what are you going to do in response to them when they over-incarcerate you? You're going to go out and have a march, a demonstration. We're going to march. March for what? Who cares? Marching has never changed anything.
Many a young athlete entertains hoop dreams. Few, if any, have tried as hard to make them come true as the kid our Steve Hartman has gone to see.
Every week, he set himself up for disappointment. Every week, 13-year-old Jamarian Stiles came to this community center in Boca Raton, Florida, hoping to play basketball with the other kids. And every week, he was rejected.
They'll start picking teams, and I would be the only one left out. And then they'll just tell me, just go home and stuff. You can break someone's heart like that.
The problem was obvious to everyone but Jamarian. He lost his hands and most of his arms as an infant due to a rare bacterial infection. But he insisted that was no reason to give up his hoop dreams.
What about soccer? Have you heard of that sport?
Yeah, hear it every day.
Why don't you play soccer? That just seems like the obvious thing.
You would think that I would be good at soccer. I'm really not. I'm horrible.
Which is why, on the first day of class here at Eagles Landing Middle School, Jamarian took his case to basketball coach Darian Williams.
Yeah.
Said he wanted to be on the team this year.
I said, all great, well, just make sure you try out.
He said, okay, great, but what are you really thinking?
This man has no arms.
Yeah.
How is he going to play basketball? But, man, he told me, Mr. Williams, I've never been on a team before. Even if I don't play, I just want to be on the team. And how could I say no to that?
And that's how the Eagles got their first armless basketball player. Jamarian, number two there, quickly earned a reputation as the hardest worker on the squad.
He was usually the first one in the gym, usually the last one to leave.
Still, he sat on the bench most of the season.
Try one more.
Until last month. Coach put him in the game with about 6 minutes left. And when he eventually got the ball on the far side of the court, everyone yelled, shoot it! So he did. And sank. A three-pointer. And if you didn't quite see that, don't worry. Because shortly after, he got the ball again. This time on the near side. For another three-pointer. At the buzzer. Jamarian Stiles. The kid no one would pick. Was now everyone's hero. Needless to say, today, Jamarian can play all he wants at the community center. He just made the volleyball team and has every intention of playing football next year. Really, the only thing he won't play is the victim.
If I could wave a magic wand right now and give you your arms back, would you want them?
I don't need them.
You don't need them?
No.
Who needs hands when you've got this kind of touch?
Now, learn this from Joel Osteen. That's my man. He be texting me. That's my man. This God done put some people around me, show me some stuff. He was telling this story. He said this man that went to heaven, and he was walking with Peter down this aisleway, and it was going down this corridor, had a lot of doors on it, and said all these doors had names on it. And he said, Peter, let me ask you something. What's all these doors, these names on? He said, don't worry about it. Just go ahead. So he kept walking. And mess around, he saw one of them doors and had his name on it. He said, whoa. He said, hey, Peter, this here ain't got my name on it. Something I need to know? He said, man, don't worry about that. You here now. Just go on in there and talk to him. See what he's here. He said, nah, I won't know what's in the door. He said, you sure you won't see what's in the door? He said, yeah. So he opened up the door. It was a warehouse. It had nothing but shelves on it. And in the shelves had nothing but packages. And all the packages had his name on them. And he said, what is all these boxes? He said, that's all of the blessings, all of the things God wanted to ship to you. But number one, you didn't ask him for it. Then number two, you didn't believe you would have it. Then you doubted him, and then you felt like you wasn't worthy, and so now all these boxes is up here. Now the man standing there wishing he had never even been in the room, and I started thinking. I got some dudes that work for me, and I said, I want you to do this graph for me, and that's what I'm finna show you now. See, what you happen is, when God sends your package, he only sends it to one street. That's Faith Street. You got to stay in faith. You can't move off of Faith Street. You can't get on Doubted Drive. You can't be over there and start doubting because your package going to go right on by. You can't lose your faith and get on not meant to be way, because your package is going to keep going right on by. Because the package just go to Faith Street. You can get your little feelings hurt, I ain't worthy. Guess what? Your package going to keep going right on by. You have not because you ask not. Then you sit up here and start feeling sorry for yourself. You go on pity way, your package keep going right on by. If you stay right on Faith Street, don't ever come off, because the blessing is coming. If you wait on it, here it comes. It may not come when you want it, but it on time. But if you get up and you move off of Faith Street, your box gonna get sent back to sender. And now you're gonna have a warehouse with a bunch of boxes with your name on it that you didn't never get. And I don't know about you, but I want everything he got for me. If he got something for me, I need all of mine. Because I don't know about you, but God lay you out, man. God will get you.
Friends, it is time once again for our daily message of hope. And with today's message, here is Richard Eaton.
Friends, to brighten your day, here is our message of hope. Afraid of change? You can't do anything about it. Change is inevitable. Growth is the great fundamental principle, the function of our lives. The seed in the ground will rot if it does not sprout and grow. And so will our minds and souls and bodies. Without conscious action and striving, our Creator answers most prayers in the terms of ideas for action. He doesn't give us something for nothing. He expects us to use what He gives us in active exercise of a freedom which He permits our minds and souls to exercise in reactions to the life patterns of ups and downs, strange events, curious, unforeseen happenings. Human consistencies, all can be changed according to the way our mind evolves, adapts, and grows. Nothing in this world is so inevitable, nor hardly so obvious. The fact is, everything does change. So often we'd like things to remain the same. It'd be so comfortable, nice. We get used to things. We adapt ourselves to a certain pattern, and then suddenly, without any warning, it changes. What are you going to do about it? Well, the first step in gaining a happier and more satisfying state of mind is recognition of the significance of this fact. Everything changes. Everything in life is changing as you and I are changing. And we must do more than this to take proper advantage of the ceaseless change inevitable in our lives. We must consciously react to direct actions that change in the paths of improvement, in the growth of our mind and soul. Change alone is inevitable and constant, but change alone is not growth. It is not progress. We have to do the progress ourselves. We have to convert. We have to adapt. Growth is a cornerstone, the primary marvel of our earthly lives. Our Creator has provided for physical growth in a pattern in which He has given us only limited powers to alter. From babyhood, we go to childhood. From childhood to adolescence. From adolescence to adulthood. And so the story grows. Physical growth. But the way we adapt ourselves to prepare ourselves for those unusual situations, the ones which we can call pleasant or unpleasant, that depends on the way we grow in our minds, the way we grow in the power of adaptation. For friends, life is a constant adaptation. Every phase of life presents a spectacle of change. And as a consequence, the spectacle of retrogression, a standstill status or progress of growth. In each case of progress or growth, there is a constant overcoming, a vanquishment of the obstacles met in the Creator's pattern of constant change. See, that's all important. All about us, we see growth or deterioration taking place in grass, in flowers, in vegetables, in pets, in our children, in our own body. But the thing that's important is the way we adapt ourselves to this change. That's all important. In our affairs, all too often, we select for cultivation the very things we don't want. Courses that lead to mistakes and trouble, sorrow and pain. Then we carefully endow these selections with the full energy of our thoughts and words. We water them with tears and self-pity. Give them the concentration of undivided attention. And then we have a way of wondering why, indeed of all our efforts, we grow in a crop of trouble and discord. Let me tell you, it is not necessary. Let us deliberately refuse to turn our thoughts to those weeds we do not want. We must discipline our minds to concentrate on the good, on positive thoughts, the sunshine and water and soil that produce good in our lives, on the thought energy, the emotional powers we concentrate on our affairs to convert inevitable change into growth. In other words, our job every single day, and this day too, is to watch where we're going, what we're doing. If we want love and happiness, be sure it's to love and happiness that you devote your attention, not to discord and bitterness and resentment. If you want success in some field, give full recognition. Yes, give full recognition to success, and it's yours already. Think positive thoughts. Fix the life-giving force of your attentions and assurance and faith on the good you already have. Look for it in every circumstance. Now make no mistake about it. Change is inevitable. You can't halt the process of change any more than you can keep your child a baby. In the words of Dr. Arthur H. Compton, everywhere the conditions of life are changing rapidly, and these changes are all in the direction of greater interdependence. That is, making better cooperation of paramount importance. The point is that in this process of change, we go forward or we go backward. We bow to circumstances or we rise above circumstances. Of course, we cannot be expected to see beyond the point of our understanding any more than we can see beyond the horizon limit of our eyes. But the point is, we can master the thoughts we permit to remain in our minds. We can choose our thoughts according to God's laws. We know we get out of life exactly what we put into it. Nothing more, nothing less. We know if we sow love, we shall reap love. We sow hate, we reap hate. We have the power to concentrate on whatever kind of thoughts we choose. We know that if we endeavor to have an understanding heart, we shall find elsewhere an understanding heart. We know if we pardon, we shall be pardoned. We know if we give, we shall receive. Look at your own picture, 5, 10, or 20 years ago. See what a change has been made on the outside, in the outside person. You will scarcely know yourself. Well, that's the growth of the body. But God has given you the mastery of your mind. Your soul can keep pace with the growth of the body, just as the less perceptible growth of the trunk of the tree matches the more visible enlargement of its limbs. Look back at what you were thinking 5, 10, or 20 years ago, at the obstacles which seemed insurmountable then, at the joys and sorrows of yesterday. And just as it's hard to believe, those old photographs are you. Yes, we really looked as we did, not as we see ourselves in the mirror today. So it is equally difficult to imagine the progress, the maturity, that our soul has accomplished and made in the course of these years. In other words, we do not change without more than we change within. This is all important to know. There is no limit to the transformation which can take place in your mind. When we dig a little deeper in our search for answers to life's questions, when we wisely read between the lines, we find that God puts his blessings upon our efforts and draws us close, imparts to us his divine wisdom. We find, first of all, that our soul, our mind, gains maturity as we react in a positive manner to the pattern of life, no matter how unpleasant or unexpected. A pattern which we may not be able to change, except in our minds. But remember, that's all important in our mind, because what actually counts is what we think, the way we feel about something. The growth of the soul, therefore, depends upon our free reaction to the problems with which we are faced. Our life is part of a divine plan, carefully prepared in every detail. Each moment of that plan offers a marvelous opportunity for our adaptation, for the growth of our soul and of our mind. The whole picture of our lives is so much brighter than the small pieces that hold and which our minds are prone to dwell on at length. Isolated from the background of all this, the whole, some parts, may look awfully black. But let me tell you, our Creator, in time, ultimately moves in on our subconscious mind and plays a pleasant trick on all of us. The unpleasant experiences of the past are relegated to the past. When we realize the power of our mind, the real secret escapes us, as long as we fail to exercise that freedom of choice, all important, endowed to us by our Creator. This mystery of growth functions in time of crises more than ever before. We say, why does this happen to me? How could this happen to me? I don't deserve this. Suppose we say, this is an opportunity, a challenge to react and gain greater maturity. Life with its steady, compelling urge to grow means that any door may open to us at any moment. Life makes us beneficiary of the physical experiences that the ages have bequeathed to us, of the signs and inventions of genius, of the mental and physical work of our forefathers that set us free to seek the larger spiritual things of life. Friends, let us profit by these examples of the past, by physical knowledge, to prepare ourselves better for the experiences of life. Yes, we can encounter experiences of all kinds along life's highway, good and bad, pleasant and unpleasant. We can prepare ourselves for many trials simply through the richness of knowledge of those who lived before us. But along that same highway, each of us is certain to meet some experiences so different from those for which we are prepared and so unexpected. But the point is, are they going to catch us unprepared and unawares? Each of us on life's journey must face a great many such surprising and disconcerting experiences that happen every day, any minute, and take us unprepared and aware. The knowledge that somehow or other we have inside of us the strength, the power, and mastery of our mind to control every situation, to react, and so to change in our mind our feelings about any problem and situation is all important. What a wonderful privilege is ours to be a human being, to know that we endow with the mastery of our mind, that we can control through our reactions whatever is our fate. No, we may not control circumstances or situations, but we can control our life because we control that which we feel about life. What a wonderful challenge it is. Friends, you've been listening once again to our message of hope. God bless you, everyone.
Listen again tomorrow for another message of hope with Richard Eaton. This is UBC, the United...
Hi, folks. In this video, I'd like to talk about how to have a home with no house payments and no monthly utility bills. You may think that's not possible, but I do it, and lots of other people do it as well. I'm going to show you how it can be done very inexpensively, and just kind of give you some ideas for things that you can do that society and the economic powers that be don't want you to know. So stay with me for a second and let me walk you through this. First, you need some land. This is my piece of land, which is under an acre, about 3/4 of an acre. And that's really all you need to take care of most of the needs you have and for running a small homestead. Now, I was lucky enough to get this piece of property from family. It was willed to me when my father passed away. But I have also purchased small pieces of property like this for under $400. I have an acre down in Arizona near Sholo, Arizona that I purchased for under $400. I have 5 acres near El Paso, Texas that I purchased for under $700. So it's very easy to find a piece of land if you do some looking around. eBay is a good source for finding land. Tax sales are a good source for finding land. Family members may want to sell off a piece of land. Go around looking in rural areas, and maybe you'll find a farmer that wants to split off a small piece of land and would gladly sell you one. You don't have to spend a lot of money on land, okay? This is land that doesn't have utilities run to it. It doesn't have a blacktop road that runs into it or driveway. It's rough land. That's what you start with usually if you want to buy a small piece of land that you're going to homestead on. After you have your piece of land, then you're going to have a house. You can have a big house like most people live in, and you can pay a lot of money for it and have a mortgage and be a slave to the system for another 30 years, or you can decide if you'd like to build a smaller house like mine. Paid for with cash. This is my solar cabin. The cabin cost me $2,000 to build. That does not include the doors and windows, which I salvaged off of a trailer that was being torn down. For the cabin, it cost me $2,000. It is 14 by 14. Downstairs is living area, dining area, bathroom, kitchen. Upstairs, I have a loft, bedroom, and an office. In my other videos, I take you on a complete walkthrough of this cabin, so watch those if you want to see how the cabin is as large as it is and functional on the inside. Up there on my roof, you see my solar panels. That's a 350-watt solar system that provides all of my electricity needs for lights, TVs, water pumps, all miscellaneous gadget, laptop, TV, run my vacuum, and everything else off of a 350-watt system. That 350-watt system cost me under $3,000. $2,000 for the cabin, $3,000 for the power system of solar electricity, and I use propane. I have a propane tank in the back of the cabin, and I have a propane furnace, fridge, stove, and on-demand water heater, and those cost me just about $200 for an entire year. And we have cold winters here, folks. Under $200 for an entire year for all of my propane. That is the only utility bill I have. I do not pay for electricity. I do not pay for water because I drilled my own water well. Before I drilled my own water well, though, I hauled water in. But drilling a water well on a piece of property is not that hard. You can either do it yourself or hire somebody to do it. So I have no monthly utility bills. I have a house that's completely paid for. And I have freedom. A freedom that you can't get when you're under the pressure of a mortgage and utility bills. I want you to take just a minute and think about what you could do with your life if you had no house payments and no utility bills. And I'm telling you, it is completely possible. I'm not going to go into any details of how to get out of the house that you're in. You're going to have to figure that out and talk to some professionals for some help that way. All I'm here to do is tell you it's completely possible. Now, some of you are looking at the cabin and saying, yeah, but I couldn't possibly live in anything that small. This cabin was designed specifically for additions to be built on any of three sides. As you can see, the cabin has no windows on any of the three sides. There is a window in the back door glass. The sides are 14 by 14. The cabin was built to have shed additions built on all three sides. This cabin is 400 square feet approximately inside with 200 square foot footprint. When you add on additions, you could add on an additional 400 square feet on either side and off the back, giving you anywhere from 800 to 1,200 square feet. The great thing about building a small cabin to start out with, though, is it gives you a place to live when you build on your additions, and that way you can wait and live very cheaply without any house payments or utility bills, and then when you have the money, you can build on the additions to expand the cabin. That's very good for a single person or a young couple who don't have children because you don't need a whole lot of space to start off with. This way you can save for it, build on as you want to, have the additions, have the extra room if that's what you want. Now, I live full-time in this cabin. I live by myself, but my girlfriend comes up here on the weekends, and we stay together, and let me tell you, it's perfectly comfortable. We don't feel cramped at all, and we'd much rather have a small place like this. It takes a lot less money to heat. It takes a lot less money to cool. It's a lot easier to clean. It's just a fantastic home. Now, I'm not trying to push you into building a home exactly like mine. I'm just trying to provide you with some ideas. If you wanted to come up with different ideas, a different plan, that's just fine by me. But if you are interested in learning how to build a home like mine, I do have an ebook available and a printed book available called Simple Solar Homesteading. Go to www.simplesolarhomesteading.com. You can learn how to build a cabin like mine or at least get some great ideas for building your own home. Now I want to repeat, I own my land. I have a house that I built for under $2,000. I have a solar electric system that I have for under $3,000. I use propane, which costs me under $200 a year. I have no house payments. I have no utility bills. If you want a life like this, it is very possible. You can stop listening to the media, and you can stop being put under society's pressures to live in the type of houses that everyone tells you you have to live in. You can live very inexpensively, and you can do this at an age, at any age, whether you're older or younger. If you're younger and you start in a place like this, imagine the amount of money that you would have to retire on, with no house payments, no utility bills, and freedom. Thank you for joining me, folks. Please watch the rest of my videos for more detailed information on each of the systems and a complete walkthrough of the cabin.
People who live in towns and cities in Uganda and many other African countries have some access to grid electricity to light their homes and power their businesses. But many rural people aren't connected at all. But simply waiting for the grid to arrive isn't good enough for entrepreneurs like Moses Akera. He recognizes there's a good business to be made harnessing the power of the sun.
I really prefer solar to be used in the community like this because it remains the property of the client. You don't pay bills and you don't buy fuel like somebody using generator.
So solar energy is the best option for many rural Ugandans. But being new to the industry, many solar retailers like Moses were struggling to make their businesses a success.
We don't have capacity to advertise ourselves, our products. We don't have capacity to have quality technical training.
So the Rural Energy Foundation, a not-for-profit organization, introduced the Solar Now program in 2007. Its aim, to spread the benefits of electricity throughout rural Africa by providing training and support to existing solar retailers like Moses. And they encourage other retailers and entrepreneurs to start selling solar equipment from scratch.
Most of these retailers need to be supported in terms of training so that they can be able to run their businesses better. They also need support in terms of market awareness because so many people out here in the field do not know about solar, so we need to come and enlighten them.
As well as training, the Rural Energy Foundation loans retailers portable demonstration kits, which they use to drum up business in local markets.
What we're trying to do is these people are off-grid and they do not have access to electricity. So we're trying to show them how solar can improve their lives. For instance, we try to show them how they can make money from solar. For instance, here with us we have a shaver, so they can use this to have barbershops. We also show them how they can use it to use light at their homes. See, when you have this light in your house, the children can study at night. They can use it in their shops to work longer hours, and they can use it at home.
If retailers want to use the Solar Now brand, they have to commit to providing high-quality installations and good after-sales service. The Rural Energy Foundation helps them achieve this by training solar technicians.
We're trying to get the entrepreneurs to sign service contracts, so when they sell the product, it also comes with after-sales service. Let's say they have to check to make a phone call to the customer after a certain period to check if the system is working, and then till after some time through the service contract, they also have to go and actually do the inspection of the system.
The Rural Energy Foundation has trained over 200 retailers in 9 African countries. So far, they've sold 57,000 solar home systems and 36,000 solar lanterns. They've helped at least 400,000 people, saved nearly 5 million litres of kerosene and 12,000 tons of CO2 each year. Basil Okelo is impressed and has decided to buy the equipment from Moses to set up his own solar barbershop and phone charging business. He's taking advantage of a credit scheme which helps entrepreneurs buy equipment from SolarNow retailers to get their businesses going.
SolarNow is giving me a loan. I'm going to make a down payment of 25% now. Later, in 3 months' time, I'll make another 25%, making a total of 50%. Then the remaining I'll complete within a period of a year.
With his system now installed, Basil is optimistic about the future.
Because this is a new investment I'm going into. I have never been into this business before. But as I see, I have the expectation that I'll make money.
Moses is growing his solar retail business too. He already had a shop in town. With support from the Rural Energy Foundation, he's now set up a small village branch to cater specifically for his rural customers.
Rural Energy Foundation is very important to us. If they help us training technician, we shall be in position to expand all over.
We hope that others will also adopt the private sector development approach. We don't want to be unique. We want to spread the word that this is a really efficient approach to get the technology diffused deeply into the rural markets.
The Rural Energy Foundation plans to expand into other African countries and broaden its range of sustainable technologies. Solar panels are now becoming a common sight here on homes, and shops buy them as well to run radios and offer phone charging, increasing their income and enabling people to communicate. And to everyone's delight, the local bar has installed a fridge powered by the sun. The owner is pleased with his investment.
Yeah, we're happy. Because it's cold, the beer tastes better, and so I get more customers.
Karnataka, southwest India. A land of temples, lush forests, but little electricity. With over 18,000 families lacking access to the grid, when the sun goes down, vast swathes of the region are shrouded in darkness. Solar energy has the potential to bring light to every home.
The people living in these areas are never going to have access to electricity. The only option for them to ever access power would be to use solar energy.
Set up 10 years ago, Selco Solar Energy is now working across the state, providing reliable and affordable energy to over 40,000 families. Selco's team of local technicians from Udupi are loading up a system to head off into the forest. Today, they're making a round trip to the Belsangadi region to bring light into the lives of another family. When they arrive, the technicians get straight to work, opening up the roof and finding the best spot for the solar panel.
Whenever we bring a solar system to a new site, we first select where to mount the panel. There are several restrictions. It must be south-facing and shadow-free. Then we consult with the customer where to keep the battery and where to install the lights.
This installation will power 4 lights. The solar panels produce a 12-volt, 40-watt charge, which is connected to a 60-amp-hour lead-acid battery, giving each light 4 hours life per day. A charge regulator is installed to help recharge the battery. After just 2 hours, the system is up and running, much to the delight of the proud new owners.
We're very happy with the new light. The children can now read with it, so we're very pleased.
The word is spreading. At this women's group, they're discussing the new technology. Selco's dealer explains how the system works and how to pay. There are over 5,000 self-help groups like this across Karnataka, with women clubbing together to take out small loans. Costing roughly $400 per unit, it's crucial that financing is thought through carefully.
As a group, this group has a greater chance of accessing bank funds because the bank also finds a greater security in the group borrowing because there is peer pressure to return the money back and ensure that the payments are done in time.
The meeting is being held at the home of Geeta Koragappa, who bought her system a year ago. She saves money by not having to buy kerosene and having time to work in the evenings.
After installing the solar light, I can save 40 or 50 rupees a month, which I use to pay for the loan for the system.
Another crucial factor is aftercare. Selco has a network of service centres where staff provide technical support to customers. Each centre has strict monthly targets and uses local agents.
The traditional problem with solar energy was systems were supplied in the areas and then it was not followed up with support. So what we have done is we have created these localized service centers within a distance of 100 to 150 kilometers from the customer's place, and these centers provide service to the individual customer.
Each service center has at least two technicians who tour the region and visit each installation every 3 months to service the system and make sure they're being used properly.
This system was installed 6 months ago, so it's scheduled for another service. First, we clean dust and bird droppings off the solar panel, then check float levels on the battery and top it up if needed. Then we clean the terminals and smear on Vaseline, check the current and the connections, and finally clean any insects off the lights.
Bringing light to the region has also brought benefit to local traders. These street hawkers in Bundapur are all using solar power. They're members of a light cooperative project started by a local NGO in partnership with Selco and run by local entrepreneurs. There are now over 70 stores here using solar light, and the scheme has been replicated in 13 places across the state.
Every morning the batteries are charged using solar panels, so I take the batteries that are fully charged and come and meet the hawkers every evening at 4:30. They give me a 12 rupee fee, then they discharge the batteries in the evening, and I charge them all up again the next day, and so it goes on every day.
In recognition of the project's success and its contribution to sustainable development, Selco have been shortlisted for an Ashton Award. They now hope to reach the poorest sections of the community.
We intend to use the Ashton Award to create income generation activities to pay back the bank loans and make solar systems viable for them.
With over 46% of homes in India off the grid and many more with unreliable electricity, Selco is hoping to replicate the success of Karnataka across India. Karnataka, southwest India, a land of temples, lush forests, but little electricity. With over
less than 10% of Ugandans have access to mains electricity. Most of the rest rely on expensive and polluting kerosene for light. Solar power is a clean alternative that can be more reliable and affordable. The hard part is distribution, getting the power to the people who need it. By creating a network of local entrepreneurs, an Australian company is doing just that. It's delivery day at the Kampala headquarters of Barefoot Power Uganda. A 40-foot truck pulls up, having just arrived in the country, packed to the roof with solar lighting systems. Casual labourers turn up for the chance of 3 hours fast and furious unloading work. But this is just the beginning of the distribution process. Designed in Australia, built and packaged in China, these solar systems are hot property on the Ugandan market. But good design is only half the battle in a country where nearly 90% of the people live in poorly connected rural areas.
Most people like the systems, but access to them is the challenge. The road network is really, really not good. If you have to reach the farthest customer, it takes you a whole day or 2 days to get to them.
Anne Kayiwa Kagwa sets off to deliver a batch of the newly arrived goods to one of her 200 sales outlets around the country.
Dennis, we have to deliver some boxes in the next trading center. Please let me know.
Ronald Kabizwa is Barefoot's star entrepreneur. His patch is Masaka District in central Uganda, covering a radius of 300 miles from his dealership in Masaka town. Ronald's main clients are coffee and banana farmers, and his peak sales season is harvest time, when the farmers have disposable income. His top seller is the Farfly desk lamp. He can sell 36 a week during harvest time. This one's being used by his neighbor's daughter.
She's revising now using Firefly. She has been able to achieve the best in her education, being the first among 58 pupils in the class.
Coffee farmer Kazibwe Apolinali has invested in a higher-end solar panel system. As well as lighting his own home, the system allows him to earn extra income.
But these days, after getting that money he saves from charging the phones and kelsin, these days he buys beef for his family. He's no longer waiting for Christmas. And even pork.
It's not just sales. Ronald is also responsible for repairs and maintenance. This aftercare service, one of Barefoot Power's selling points, gives customers confidence in a market swamped with unreliable solar products.
It was the battery which went down.
It's one reason for the company's rapid expansion, together with the energy and determination of its entrepreneurs.
I started with only 2 clients. As I'm talking right now, I'm having like 2,000 and above.
In addition to the network of entrepreneurs, Barefoot Power has other important distribution channels.
We partner with NGOs to bring affordable light and phone charging solutions to their communities. And we also work with big corporations. So for example, telcos, which may be distributing phones, now have a phone charging solution. So it's a diverse distribution channel.
Using these channels, Barefoot Power estimates it has sold more than 350,000 systems since it was founded in 2005, benefiting more than 1.7 million people. And sales are increasing rapidly.
It works. It's just a matter of building awareness and governments and private sector and public sector coming together to recognize that it's a way to bring people out of poverty.
You actually change people's lives in real time. It's dark in somebody's house, they get a light and suddenly it's brighter. It is very fulfilling. I am paid to do the job, all right, but it is very fulfilling to see that I'm actually changing people's lives as I do my job.
Jutting out on the southern shore of Lake Victoria, Bismarck's rocks are a landmark for Mwanza, the second largest city in Tanzania. Beyond the bustling commercial centre, the roads deteriorate and other services diminish. Most communities have no electricity, but Zara Solar, a family business, is helping to lighten the dark. Tanzania has one of the lowest electrification rates in the world, and many villages are just too far from the national grid to expect electrification in the near future.
90% of the rural areas doesn't have national grid electricity. So you find that 90% are in the dark.
Zara Solar has seen the chance to use the sun to deliver electricity to remote areas.
Over 30 million people still don't have electricity. And because of the way they are scattered, the communities in the rural areas, it is very expensive, yeah, to provide the mains. So solar becomes the only option we have sanctioned throughout the year.
Kerosene lanterns are most common in rural areas, but for poor families they are not only expensive but a hazard to health and safety.
Kerosene lamps are smoky and bad for health. Also, small children may play and knock over the lamp, which is dangerous and can cause a fire.
akacheza kidogo ile chemuri nojani moto ikaleta taa za sola zina ubora sana.
Solar light is excellent. There are no health problems. Also, if you buy solar, you get energy directly from nature. We don't have to pay electricity bills every day.
Kutoka kwa Mungu moja kwa moja. Kwa hiyo hamna kwenda kulipa TANESCO kila siku.
Unreliable roads make it impossible for Zara to provide backup from Mwanza, so they use local technicians to install equipment properly.
Solar technology is very simple, but there are very minute things that needs to be taken care of. Now, a normal electrician will not be able to know those if he has not attended any solar course. Yeah. So the result was that many solar systems failed, yeah, in different places. So people now had a negative attitude towards solar. They know this is not workable.
Zara's technicians are sometimes called in to repair problems with faulty installations.
I'll have to come back tomorrow to sort out this problem.
We have a network of technicians who are scattered in almost all the districts in Mwanza region, and now we have gone beyond to other regions also. In that way, a customer who walks in here and buys anything, he doesn't have to take my technician for the installation. So I just connect him with one of the technicians who is near to his place, and the installation cost becomes lower. So anyone now who wants to buy a solar system, they will try first to contact him, and then he refers them to me. So in that way, I scratch their back, yeah, they scratch mine. Yeah.
Above is the solar panel. The electricity travels down to the charge controller. From the charge controller, it goes to the battery. Afterwards, it returns to the charge controller and carries on to the light. This system has an inverter for changing direct current 12 volts to 220 volts to charge a phone or using a television.
Thanks to his brigade of trained effective technicians and quality equipment, Mohammed has made Zara a real success.
When we started Zara Solar, the first month we did sales of around $200. Now, it's almost 2 years, we have almost reached $60,000 per month. My main concern here is to make profit. Initially, when I started, I never realized that I'm doing something better for the community. But now, after I see, it is also a source of income generating. It is making somebody be able to live.
Before I had solar, I used a generator. The problem with the generator is that it would keep breaking down and many fish would die. For this business, solar is vital as it never cuts out.
When I started my solar business, I never dreamed that one day somebody will recognize my work and appreciate and honor me for that. So being a finalist, whether I win or I don't win, yeah, it's something else. But just going to London and participating in this award ceremony, it's a big thing. I can say it's a lifetime achievement to me.
Give me a warning, like 3 seconds before
it's going to go. 1, 2, 3, go.
Really? It's going to go? Oh my gosh! Yay! Okay guys, this is it. It's been a long time coming, but as of this moment, we are officially off-grid.
Right.
Now, off-grid means we're not tapped into any line. We're completely separate. There's another thing you can do in solar called hybrid, which is you're interconnected with the system.
Yeah.
But we're 100% off-grid. This is a 5 kilowatt setup. What we got here, this is Felix from Davao, I believe. No, Tagum or Davao?
Davao, yeah.
Davao represent. This is Mike, who you would have met before. Now they're actually both engineers, or are you both engineers?
Yeah.
I didn't know Mike was an engineer. That's tough, bro. But they both have companies and they work together to do various projects here in the Philippines. And Mike was a friend of mine, so I decided to try and do my solar through him, and it's been really successful. Mike, what exactly is this?
This is a off-grid setup for solar, a 5 kilowatt off-grid setup. Inverter, the circuit breakers, and the battery.
Okay, cool, yeah. Cool. Now, what I want to know, Felix, what does that thing do? What does it do?
So basically, the inverter will convert the batteries and solar panels into a AC system, so that we can utilize inside our house.
Okay.
From batteries, from a solar panel, it will charge the batteries. Mm-hmm. And right now we are using directly the sun energy.
So everything's coming from
the sun. Yeah, sun energy, because tonight batteries will start up.
Yeah.
It will work
cool.
Tonight.
So from what I know, now correct me if I'm wrong, guys, but we have these panels, so there's 14 panels.
Yeah.
They're 400 volts each, or watts, sorry.
No, 450 watts. Yeah.
450 watts, sorry. And they're all set up here, and they're running down to this box. They're connected to the batteries, which are being charged.
Charged,
they're going to the inverter, which is converting everything to electricity for our house.
Yeah,
exactly, yes.
Now, this system here, I saw, if you look at the green box, there's like percentages.
Yes.
So maybe when we're all turned on, it says 25%, 30%, something like that. So this system here is actually much more than we really need at this time for our house.
Yeah.
But is that a good thing or a bad thing when you're building solar? Is it okay to build a bigger system? Like, is that okay? Like, will that energy just sit here or...?
Advisable, but because someday you will add more appliances, so
better you have a spare energy.
So
it's good. You have a bigger size of system than your load.
No, you hear that? It's like it's very, very quiet. Is this the loudest it's gonna get?
Yeah. It's the fans, cooling fans.
So up here coming in.
Yeah.
So this box here, what you guys are looking at right now, this is actually going to be completely covered.
Yeah.
This will be, we have a friend who does construction who's coming in. They built this whole setup, and they're going to be putting a box here. So I guess solar, this can't get wet, diba?
Yeah.
This
yeah.
has to be separate.
Yeah.
But these panels here, which you would have seen on the drone, do we have to clean them or?
Not necessarily you have to clean it, because it's raining, so it will wash out the dirt.
Yeah.
So the maintenance on these panels is pretty easy.
Yeah.
You just leave
them. You can wipe also, but just leave it. It will clean by itself because we have rain.
Lifeline. So we have, let's start here, batteries. How long were these babies going to last us?
Maybe from 3 to 5 years. Yeah.
3 to 5 years.
Yes.
So
depends on the usage.
And then each battery could be replaced after about that time?
Yeah.
Easily we can replace it.
Inverter. Is this going to last a long time?
Yeah.
Or?
Yes,
it's still long.
Like how many years maybe?
10 years maybe?
10 years.
Yeah.
And then the panels, these are 25 years
warranty.
So the panels are actually...
Yeah.
Now what's interesting is our solar pump, which I'll show you in the future, it runs straight from a panel. So in the Philippines, yes, brownouts happen, just like in other places, but because we're off-grid, is there any way this can explode, or like can it short circuit, or like is there anything like a safety thing here?
Yeah, we have a lot of
protection
devices there.
Mm-hmm.
We have surge protection device, we have a miniature circuit breaker, and also the battery isolator. So if it is overload, it will automatically trip off. So it's safe,
So like this is basically all good.
Yeah.
You just gotta cover it up, keep it dry.
Yeah.
And then there's built-in fans keeping everything
cool.
Yeah,
ventilation, you have to put some ventilations inside of this.
Now, I know that over the past like 10 years, solar's becoming a lot more affordable.
Yeah.
And even this, like I'm not gonna tell you guys the exact price we paid, but I will tell you that it is very affordable and you're going to get your return of investment in the future, because now we're never going to have to pay electric.
Yeah.
It's all now, from this point on, free.
Yeah. Yes.
But for, like, let's say you wanted to do solar on your beach property, like, can people just contact you, or how does that work? Like,
yeah. We have a Facebook page also.
Okay.
And you know me.
You know what, actually, this is never a plan. So I always wanted to do solar.
Yeah.
And then literally about a month before my accident, I was just like chatting with Mike. I was like, wait a minute, Mike, you do electrical stuff. Can you actually do solar? And he's like, yeah. We're like, oh, dope. Okay, so we ended up doing it. And then Mike and Felix work together. So they have two companies.
Yeah.
And basically, yeah, I'm just going to put their details in the video so you can contact them if you want. They're friends of mine, you know, you can trust them. And this whole thing, as you would have seen last night, briefly, and as you'll see tonight, I'm going to show you, it's pretty cool when it turns on, because it's like...
Oh.
I called my parents earlier, I was like, we're solar! it's like, dope, man.
More.
More, go.
Oh.
So literally right now we have like just some people charging stuff, maybe a light or two on. We're only using 8% right there, 8% of our whole load.
Yeah.
Load meaning how much electricity we have and can utilize.
Yeah.
So maybe tonight I'm going to show you guys, we're going to check this again, I'm going to turn everything on. And what do you think? What do you think that would be, like 30%, 35%?
No, maybe 15%.
Only 15.
Yeah. 15 or 20, yes, like that.
So when it comes to lights, fans, kind of low...
And right now we are using
the freezer.
Yeah,
we have a big freezer. So the freezer's plugged in. We can put in 10 more freezers, no problem. If you want to do solar, you can just message me, and personally to my Facebook page, Becoming Filipino, I can give you their details. Or you can also, I'm going to put it in the description, how you can contact their companies. Again, Mike is my friend. Felix is now my friend. He used to work in Dubai for 10 years doing engineering, no?
Yeah.
Mike is with his wife. They have a construction electrical company around Davao. Basically, yeah, you can trust them. And solar is actually really easy to get.
Yeah.
So if you want to, you know, do good things for the environment, and if you want to, you know, have a good system and feel comfortable chilling out, even if there's brownout, solar.
Green energy.
I like it. Feeling green.
Yeah.
It's a green inverter. Yeah. Next one. Cool, man.
Alright.
Thank you. Budong. The best. What's that doing, no? I got a budong. Nong, how do you make a braylon? Slama nong. I am. Thank you. Oh, I am. Nice.
The best. Mama. Interesting style. Tunga tunga. Lama. Whew. So everyone's out surfing. I'm just gonna do my therapy exercises and drink buko. Kumar's been training the local kids how to surf as well. Let's get bread! Spoon is the best. Go, go, go! Go, 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 go!
Go, hi, paddle!
And the Philippines is a very Catholic country, and it's Sunday, so there's a procession. Hi guys. We're going in.
Asata.
We're going to the magic box to see our consumption. So we have everything rolling inside the house right now. It's a freezer, a bunch of fans, and all of our lights. Going in to the inverter. Let's see the percentage. can't say it. I can tell you it. 17%. So we're only using 17% of this whole system right now for our place. Obviously, we're going to add a lot more stuff in the house, but we have a lit-up house, a freezer, and a bunch of fans going on, and people charging stuff. And we're only using 17%, and that's awesome. That's awesome. Look it. It's awesome, man. What I'm going to do is I'm going to go through this in the future and show you more about our lights and things that we have, because we've got a bunch of unique stuff. But again, we have a lot of work to do in organizing over the next couple of weeks. So.
Horror
movie. Wait. No. In the Philippines, you do this when you leave, right? To get rid of the horrible spirit. Diba?
Bye-bye.
1986, when the Chernobyl disaster sent radioactive clouds all over Europe, we knew we had to do something against nuclear energy. Many parents were really concerned about their children, and so some of us formed a group named Parents for a Nuclear-Free Future. We began to educate ourselves in how to save energy. We started in our own home, and then we tried to motivate others to do the same. We wanted the energy company to support us, but they told us no, because we want to sell energy and not to save energy. And so one day we had the idea to take over the grid.
Citizens could generate their own power from solar, hydro, and wind.
Small producers are paid when they feed their electricity into the grid. Consumers are rewarded when they save energy.
So then there was only one question. How do we get the power grid? When the election came up to decide who controls the grid, we knew it was now or never.
EWS, the Shunao Electrical Power Company, held two citizen referendums and won them both.
The power company said, well, you have the votes, but we have the grid. And we want 9 million Dutch mark, and either you pay it or we don't give you the grid. So we had a campaign asking people to help us raising this money.
It took EWS 7 long years to purchase the electrical grid.
This power company was afraid that this was the beginning of a movement, and it was.
Under Ursula's plan, homeowners have small power plants called cogenerators. EWS is now collectively owned by more than 1,000 citizens.
A year after we had taken the grid, the German electricity market was deregulated. Every person could buy electricity from the company he had chosen. And that is the idea of renewable power, because it's decentralized.
This is grassroots at its best. More than 100,000 people now have the electric current from this very small city, and they are very proud of it.
We want to have 100% renewable energy in 2050. All studies say it is possible to do that, and so we will do it.
For outstanding environmental achievement in Europe, the 2011 Goldman Environmental Prize is awarded to Ursula Sladek, Schunau, Germany.
And today's It's My House is titled Zero Light Bill Communities, and I don't know, it must be something in the air. I've been getting a whole lot of calls lately from black folks that want to go solar. So we played a series of those videos, plus don't want to let the cat out of the bag too soon, but we'll be back in a couple minutes.
How it go? We got one out of two of them motherfuckers, you know?
You mean you motherfuckers come strolling in here all walking tall and shit?
You'll be out, man. I'm saying, man, we was blazing on them dudes, man. You know what I'm saying? Just got in the heat, man. We was blazing, though. It was late.
All right, relax, man. I already heard. Go sit down. I'm not tweaking behind none of this. That's one less motherfucker that's breathing than was yesterday. You know what I'm saying? So we all good. But I'm surprised with you, though, man. Shit didn't get by you back when.
Well, my man's fault, man. I unloaded on the younger too soon, man. Gave him enough room to buck and run, man. I fucked that shit up myself, you know.
Hold on.
It's on me. I had that kid in my sights, close enough to take off his Kango and half his dome with it. Couldn't squeeze the trigger. Couldn't do it, man.
Why not?
Wasn't in me, I guess. You know, whatever it is in you that lets you flow like you flow and do that thing, it ain't in me no more.
Alright. So you done soldiering, but you ain't done. Could use you for what you got in your head. We're gonna put you on a corner. You could be inside.
Oh, man. I ain't making myself clear. The game ain't in me no more. None of it.
But you ain't done shit else. You know what I'm saying? So what you gonna do?
I don't know. But it can't be this.
All right, then. We straight.
B, he was a man in his time, you know?
Yeah. He a man today. He a man.
Did you prime it? That little rubber ball right there next to the spark plug. Gotta push it in 3 times before you try to start it. Gets the gas going to the car.
You want the truth? I ain't never used one of these. Never had no call to.
Yeah, well, I didn't pick you up for your landscaping skills. All these Spanish, they on paper too. Only use people like y'all. Sometimes it comes back on me, sometimes it works out fine.
Well, how long you been uptown?
10 years.
Hotter than a motherfucker out here.
Yeah, it's hot. Every day. You're going to be riding in the back of that hard truck, bouncing around every day. And your back's going to be yelling at you every day. I used to drive an SL, pretty gold convertible, nice rims. I don't even think on that car no more.
You put it behind you, huh?
Some can't. I'm just saying, you want to stay on the straight. Ain't going to be no big reward to it. This is it, right here. Prime that bitch 3 times. She'll start right up.
Okay, today's podcast is titled "The Light Bill Communities," and all of a sudden, out of the virtual blue, I've been getting phone calls and text messages from black folk that want to go solar. And I've been at this for a while. But what's interesting, matter of fact, now we played 2 cuts from the wire. Well, first thing, I played a whole bunch of series of videos on what I'm coining. It's various light bill, zero light bill communities around the globe. Now, in green circles, some people might call these sustainable villages or solar energy villages or renewable energy villages, that type thing, or net zero energy villages or communities. But I'm calling it is zero light bill communities, and we played stuff from Tanzania, Uganda, outside the, well, probably on the fringes, if not within the Black Forest region, Schwarzwald region in Germany. And particularly the last one I played in Germany. You know, a husband and wife, Ursula Sledeck and her husband, met with a couple of neighbors, two, three neighbors, in a German pub in a small little village in Germany. As the audio stated, they wanted to they didn't want nuclear energy power in their village. So it took them some years, and they bought out the grid. They bought the grid. And then they started their own solar venture. They're probably making, not probably, they're doing over 100 million euro a year on that now. But, you know what? Let me see. I'm trying to load up. Anyway, with these phone calls that I got over the weekend, and I got to return a text or two today. And we got a real good guest coming in tomorrow. Real good. I found a guy that he's living this stuff right here in the United States. So it dawned on me. And matter of fact, I'm getting ready to play before we go to the phone lines. Van Jones some years ago. Oh, wait a minute. Okay, I'm loading up a Van Jones video. He wrote a book titled The Green Collar Economy. I knew about that book before the general public. And I had a chance to meet Van in D.C. I was doing a volunteer project. And I was the only... We were in a black neighborhood, the Anacostia neighborhood in D.C. And, of course, now, a lot of people that came to the event were, in fact, black. But the people that were running, the event were all white except for me. Even the late Marion Barry came through for a photo op, but he came through before Van. You know, most people didn't even know, particularly black folks. Did not know who Van Jones was at that time. This was before Obama got in office, all that. So I knew who he was. And I went to shake Van's hand, and just as we were about to get into a convo, the white folks came and swept him up. Anyway, he released the book of The Green Collar Economy, and... He gives, matter of fact, I'm going to play this for you because, and this is why I played The Wire a bit, because the people that you, like you hear in The Wire, those characters, you know, now they were drug dealers and that type of thing. But Van Jones, in his book, The Green Collar Economy, let's see. Multitasking while I'm talking to you guys. Okay. He suggested in that book that the Pookie and Ray Rays of the world, these are guys that live in the hood, that might be looking for an employment opportunity or a career opportunity, look into solar energy. So I'm going to play this bit from and Van, and then I'm going to give you my take on it and what happened over the weekend and how we're going to keep that going.
Fora TV, the world is thinking.
First of all, we've got to go back to producing something here in the United States. All right? How about that? Actually producing something here. And there's one thing we can produce here that we've not produced, which is clean energy. That is the big multi-billion dollar play left in the U.S. economy. The opportunity to take our Saudi Arabia of wind energy that we have in our plain states and our Saudi Arabia of solar energy that we have in our Sun Belt and on millions of rooftops coast to coast, and connect those clean energy power centers to our population centers and run this country on clean energy. Now, that is the breakthrough. that begins to solve a number of problems at once. First of all, it puts the country back to work, because now what can you say to people in Detroit? Rather than saying to people in Detroit, we're going to bail you out so you can make SUVs that are 2% more fuel efficient in 10 years, which we're not sure who's going to buy it, but we're going to bail you out. We can say, now, how about this? Rather than Detroit being asked to make slightly better SUVs that are going to help destroy the world, we can ask Detroit to make wind turbines and smart batteries and solar panels that can help save the world. Why do I say that? Because the real question we have to ask ourselves is, what do we want to do with our industrial capacity in this country? That's the real question. Why not put a $15 billion purchase order on the table for wind turbines? Right? Enough wind turbines to actually tap our plain states. And to be clear, when I say wind turbine, some of you guys have children, and when I say wind turbines, you hear windmill. I know you do. You're thinking about, oh, I have the child on my lap. And we're turning the, look, there's a lamb, you know, and there's a farmer, and there's a cow, and there's a windmill. That's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about wind turbines, right? Think Boeing-level engineering. Think a jet engine in the sky that can turn a breeze into real power. I'm talking about 8,000 finely machined parts in each one. 8,000 finely machined parts in each one. That's a car. That's a car. If you put them on a wind tower, that's 20 tons of steel. So you can put your automakers back to work and your steel workers back to work, just turning our plain states into wind energy clean power centers. Right? I'm talking about smart batteries. I'm talking about solar panels and solar thin film. Right? We've got to produce something. Let's produce that. Wind turbines, it's better to produce them here than overseas anyway, because they're so heavy. Those big blades, you don't want to build them someplace else and put them on a boat. That would be a big boat. So it's better to actually, it's more economical to build them here. So why don't we, rather than bailing out Detroit to do what's not going to work anyway, why don't we actually buy the things that we need and let General Motors retool? General Motors is called General Motors, not General Cars or General SUVs. The motors that we need would run those solar, would run those wind turbines, okay? We've got to go back to producing something here in the United States. Let's put Detroit back to work. It gets better than that. It's not just about producing more energy, cleaner and greener energy. It's also about conserving and using more efficiently the energy we produce from any source. And there's another opportunity to put people back to work in energy efficiency. What am I talking about? I'm talking about good working class jobs, blowing in clean, non-toxic insulation in buildings. You know, everybody wants to beat global warming. We got to stop global warming. I'm going to ride my bike. Good. You should ride your bike. But if you ride your bike from your house that's hooked up to a coal-fired power plant that's leaking all kind of energy and it's 30% inefficient, to your office building that's doing the same thing, to the mall that's doing the same thing, and then back home, you're missing 40% of our greenhouse gas problem, which is not automobiles, but our buildings. Our buildings are actually 40%. You spend, unless you live in Los Angeles, you don't spend that much time in your car. You spend an awful lot of time in buildings. Computers on, iPods plugged up, TVs on. And if you're hooked up to a coal-fired power plant, you're dumping megatons of carbon into the air. With existing off-the-shelf technology, we can bring that down by 30%, 40%, and save you money. We haven't done it because up until now we haven't taken it seriously. We've got a proposal called the Clean Energy Corps that will let cities do that across the country and take folks off the street corner, right? People coming home from wars, people coming home from prison, people leaving high schools with no future, and take that soldier and say, put down that handgun, pick up this caulk gun, right? And let's get to work retrofitting a nation, repowering and rebooting America. Thank you.
not be able to stay home, brother. You will not be able to plug in, turn on, and cop out. You will not be able to lose yourself on Skag and skip out for beer during commercials because the revolution will not be televised. The revolution will not be televised. The revolution will not be brought to you by Xerox in four parts without commercial interruptions. The revolution will not show you pictures of Nixon blowing a bugle and leading a charge by John Mitchell, General Abrams, and Spiro Agnew to eat hog maws confiscated from a Harlem sanctuary. The revolution will not be televised. The revolution will not be brought to you by the shape of a war theater and will not star Natalie Woods and Steve McQueen or Bullwinkle and Julia. The revolution will not give your mouth sex appeal. The revolution will not get rid of the nub. The revolution will not make you look 5 pounds thinner because the revolution will not be televised, brother. There will be no pictures of you and Willie Mae pushing that shopping cart down the block on the dead run or trying to slide that color TV into a stolen ambulance. NBC will not be able to predict the winner at 8:32 on Detroit from 29 districts. The revolution will not be televised. There will be no pictures of pigs shooting down brothers on the instant replay. There will be no pictures of pigs shooting down brothers on the instant replay. There will be no pictures of Whitney Young being run out of Harlem on the rail with a brand new process. There will be no slow motion or still life of Roy Wilkins strolling through Watts in a red, black, and green liberation jumpsuit that he has been saving for just the proper occasion. Acres, Beverly Hillbillies, and Hooterville Junction will no longer be so damn relevant, and women will not care if Dick finally got down with Jane on Search for Tomorrow, because black people will be in the street looking for a brighter day. The revolution will not be televised. There will be no highlights on the 11 o'clock news and no pictures of Harry R. Woman Liberationist and Jackie Onassis blowing her nose. The theme song will not be written by Jim Webb or Francis Scott Key, nor sung by Glenn Campbell, Tom Jones, Johnny Cash, Engelbert Humperdinck, or The Rare Earth. The revolution will not be televised. The revolution will not be right back after a message about a white tornado, white lightning, or white people. You will not have to worry about a dove in your bedroom, the tiger in your tank, or the giant in your toilet bowl. The revolution will not go better with Coke. The revolution will not fight germs that may cause bad breath. The revolution will put you in the driver's seat. The revolution will not be televised, will not be televised, will not be televised, will not be televised. The revolution will be no rerun, brothers. The revolution will be live.
The Green Revolution is in motion, and I would say it's been in motion for, now it's not at warp speed, but in the United States at least, but it's been in motion probably for at least 20 years, as I think about it. I got into it in the early 2003, about 2004, somewhere around there. Not going at warp speed, plenty of opportunity. And there's so many niches with it. I consider it overall in the United, actually North America, if not the whole entire Western Hemisphere, even in a lot of Europe, still in pioneer phases, in my opinion. It depends on what niche you're talking about, particularly when it comes to individual residential household application of it. But there are people now, you know, you got your little solar companies, installer companies. Most of them are mom and popping it right now. That in some of your larger cities. But where the action is, and I'm at the, you know what, I got to reread the green collar economy. Now, Van Jones was referring to people in urban areas. But to really get in on this, where the action is in the rural areas. And rural areas and, like, really small towns. And that I mean, Walmart came up the same way. A lot of companies came up the same way. You know, you get into the small towns and you grow. And just statistically, there are over 19,000 towns in the United States. That's everybody from Podunk, Mississippi, population one. And they do have towns in the United States that have one or two people, seriously. But a little bit over 19,000 towns in the United States. And let's see. Out of that 19,000 towns, 19,000 plus towns, 3,800 of those towns are ghost towns. Nobody lives here anymore. But out of that, there are 10 to 11 cities in the United States, because they got, you know, they have the distinctions here. You know, there's a definition for what a city is. There's a definition for what a town is. You know, what class town, you know, class one town, class two town. So you got, you know, and then you got villages and, you know, on down, you know, hamlets and that type thing. So in the United States, out of the 19,000 plus towns, let's just keep things simple. Let's say there are 19,000 towns in the United States. Okay. That's large, small, everything. About 10 to 11, I'll stretch it to 11. There are about 11 towns in the United States that have a population of a million people or more. Matter of fact, let me see if I can bring that up. Rankings of most populated. Cities in USA. Okay, let's see what we got here. Okay. All right, this list has got 10. All right. So out of 19,000, there's more than 19,000 towns, but I'm just keeping things simple right now. Out of the 19,000 towns, cities, what have you in the United States, 10 of them, just 10, have a population of a million people or more. Now, there's some cities that are knocking at the door, like Austin, Texas has over 900,000. Jacksonville, Florida has over 900,000. Fort Worth, Texas has over 900,000. But just 10 have a population right now as we speak of a million people or more. I would say over or around, let's see, around 16,000. Well, give me some leeway here. Between 14,000 to 16,000 towns in the United States have a population of 5,000 people or less. Now, let's put it down at 14,000 for the sake of this. It's not accurate, but it's in the ballpark. So you got 10 cities, only 10 out of 19,000, that have a population of a million or more people. That's in the city proper. I'm not talking about metro areas. Then you've got, I'm bringing it down to 14,000. Now, let's bump it up to 15,000 that have a population of 5,000 people or less. And then out of that 15,000 that have a population of 5,000 people or less, you got about 40%, about 46% of that have a population of under 500 people or less. That's what action is. That's what action is. When I was over in Europe, when I was just, you know, getting into, because I got into renewable energy and everything over in Europe, and where the action is over there at that time still might be the same way now. The rural act, you know, I was talking to a solar salesman, and she was telling me, you know, where she was getting the business. It was basically in the rural areas, and she was dealing with farmers. Some of those farmers had replaced their dairy income with, you know, feeding solar into the village. They became the de facto utility company, at least for electricity, in their particular village. And some of the videos that I play, audio I played from videos this morning, same thing in Africa. To repeat, and I've had one person some years ago on here, he called live from Uganda. But most of the sales that are happening with, now I like the African and Asian business model when it comes to solar, but that's a whole different podcast. Because they have, in my opinion, a sustainable business model where if a village person can afford it, it's affordable. Over here, we don't, in Western countries, we haven't come across that yet. There are some people, but it's just a handful. But most of this, you know, most of the solar that's selling over in on the continent of Africa, it's done in rural areas, all right? And we're going to have some more people from the continent calling in that, so you can hear it from them. I'm saying, and I'm going to try to get, not try, some kind of way I'm going to get Van Jones on this podcast, but going from the book, The Green Collar Economy, now, Van Jones was correct in this book, but I believe where it's going to happen first, is not going to be in the city. It's going to be from rural areas. But in any event, tomorrow we're going to have a guest on. Let me take one call here. We got a guest on. You're really enjoying him, so you have your pens, paper, whatever, and take notes on him tomorrow. Let's take this one call here. 314, your mic is open.
And there they are on that solar kick again.
What's that?
I say, here we go, people getting on the solar kick again. Them come,
oh, it's
them
not,
people
like I say, I see it coming. I see it coming in rural areas. That's where,
those
forget about
over,
the city.
Well, yeah, that's for houses. People can put a solar system on their house if they want to, but you can't develop a population off of that.
Well, all I'm
and especially
I'm
in countries like in, especially like in countries like in, like over in Africa, where they need to build industrial plants and so forth, you can't operate that off of solar. I've been down here in Louisiana for the last month, and I think the last month sun has shined probably about 4 days.
Sounds like Germany.
But electricity. But electricity is going on. The most efficient way to produce electricity, looking at a world, and the source is the most efficient, is hydro. Hydro is anywhere from 85 to 90% efficient.
I consider that renewable energy, too. Of course, most people don't have a river running by their house, so.
Yeah, but those that do can distribute electricity. Then another thing, you got to be able to distribute it.
That's true.
And distribution goes over power lines. And solar is not going to power the type of voltage that's needed.
It's not going to power, Chicago tomorrow. You're right about that.
Yeah, well, you know how much voltage is on those high tension lines? You have anything from 300,000 to 500,000 volt. And it has to be alternating current. Can't be direct current.
I won't be climbing up any of those poles anytime soon.
No, you won't. They won't be putting them in the ground neither, because it just don't make. It just ain't. I mean, it just the feasibility is not there. Electromagnetic force that come off of current flowing through power lines require you at 30,000 volts. You need to stay back off of them at least 15, 20 feet.
Mm.
Now, what I see that's going to be in the future is going to be nuclear. But developing countries that have abundance of natural gas,
mm-hmm.
and the other elements that they have, natural gas is used to heat water to turn into steam, to turn in steam turbines. That itself is about 40% efficient. Plus, you got a storage of natural gas that's in the ground that could last you for a century or more, if not longer.
There's a lot of natural gas out there.
Yeah. But hydro is the most efficient. Then you got countries that still use coal in combination. And then they got the other elements that's used. But if people want to put, if people want to use solar as a need to supplement the home electricity, they can. But then you got to look at the ramifications of everybody going on solar. What are you going to do with all those people that work for them power lines that maintain those power lines?
Just like the Pony Express man or woman. The Pony
Express, the Pony Express, what they've done with that is that they created telecommunication with the communication lines, which actually you got one man riding a pony, whereas with telecommunication line, you have a bigger industry where you put more people to work that can consume things, that can save, buy homes, and put their kids through school.
Well, you know, you bring up a good point here. You bring up a good point here. Now, where I'm at, in Lakeland, Florida, Lakeland has its own electricity company, Lakeland Electric. Mm-hmm. And they have their own men, or their own
crew.
How do
they generate
it? Women on the crew. Huh?
How do they generate it?
I think coal. But they have trucks that come out. All right, if you don't pay your bill, they have trucks that come out and shut you off. All right. Now, in D.C., where you have Pepco, all right, wherever you are, they don't have anybody that comes out. Now, when I was younger, because I grew up in D.C., they had people that came out and cut it off. But now they have a system in D.C., Pepco, because Pepco is Pepco, is they can cut it off remotely from wherever they are at Pepco. You don't pay it, they don't send anybody out, they just shut it off. So I'm bringing that up because you brought up the jobs thing. I'm figuring one way or another, sooner or later, Lakeland Electric will phase out their crew, you know, that comes. I'm sure they do more than shutoffs and shuts back on. But I'm sure they're going to eventually phase them out because also here in Lakeland, when the garbage truck, about 15 years ago, you know, they had the garbage truck that came out, and they had like two men on the back of the truck, one in the cab, and of course you had your driver. The driver would stay in the driver's seat. But they would jump off, get to your address, you know, pick up the trash and put it back in the thing and scoop it up, and they put your trash, your cans back, and they go on to the next house. That doesn't exist anymore. Now they come out with two people, and the driver, and they have another person that rarely gets out of the truck. And they have a robot now, or an arm, I call it a robot, that will, they push the button and it picks up the trash can. You know, the big containers.
Yeah, and the trash bins and dump them in the back.
Yeah, exactly. So they've eliminated two people off of that, two employees, two people that were getting benefits, two people that could have been on a pension. They've eliminated those two. And then with the recycle bin, same thing. But that guy that could get out of the cab, the only time he gets out is if, you know, you place the trash bin too far away or whatever. So that's how I'm looking at how the electric company here will, you know, because they see other, D.C. isn't the first place that have it. You know, they'll set up where, you know, they can shut off the electricity remotely. And you'll still have a street crew, but it'll be, their function will be different. It'll be reduced.
Yeah, in St. Louis area, it's not, Ameren has power plants. They have Portage de Sioux.
Mm-hmm.
They have Merrimack. It's down in South Missouri around Cape Girardeau and that. Portage de Sioux is up in North Missouri.
Mm-hmm.
You got Callaway, which is out in West Missouri. Callaway is a nuclear power plant.
Okay.
And there's, let's see, Rush Island is also going down south. And mostly down south, Missouri is rural areas.
Okay.
Those are, only one that's nuclear that I know of, even let's just put it down, is Callaway. Now, Callaway, now you can stand, you can stand in some areas in near St. Louis City, and you can look west on a clear day, and you can see Callaway. I mean, Callaway may be about 60 miles away. Well, I ain't going to say 60 miles away, but it's a long way. I say at least 40. Depends on the elevation that you're standing. Now, those plants provide electricity for some broad areas that's not going to be, I mean, you're talking about industrial areas. You got areas that, you got steel mills, you got heavy manufacturing, you got sewage treatment, and you got water plants. Solar is not going to power that. It just ain't going to do it. Because you cannot get that type of wattage, that type of current flow from those solar panels. And then if you put up enough solar panels to get somewhere near that, look at all the land that you are making unavailable for the things that people normally use the land for, especially in agriculture.
Mm-hmm. But I'm not saying it's a silver bullet. It's not a silver bullet. I agree with you.
No, what it is, it's a novelty. It's a novelty. Like, you can have solar refrigerators. Solar refrigerators work pretty cool as long as the sun's shining. A solar freezer. There's companies I gave you some links to that.
Yeah, you did.
Now, one of the things with putting solar on your home and getting completely off the grid, and some people like to tie the grid and sell electricity back, make your meters run backwards. I think they don't stop letting those meters run backwards, or you can sell it back to the electric company.
Mm-hmm.
But there's a lot of things that have to be considered there. Location,
I'm glad,
trees
glad
in the way.
You said that. Somebody I talked to on Sunday, because his father had him, I talked to him. I said, look, mm-hmm. before you consider panels and all this other stuff, because somebody's trying to sell them a system, I said, look, the first thing you need to do is cut back on your consumption in your home, you know, with the light bulbs, the appliances, that type of stuff. Because if you don't, you know, they're going to try to sell you a system.
Well, yeah, somebody's always trying to sell something. But what I'm saying
right.
is this, is that I think that you run people don't know what they're as efficient as they're going to get when you look at all the things. That home I built had a wood-gas combination furnace. You can stoke it with wood. When the wood run on low, then the gas turn on. Well, what does it require to get wood? Well, you got trees got to be cut down, and you got to go out and split logs and all this stuff, and you got to come home
Bianca,
and stack
did you
it.
Go? Did you I'm taking you probably went to the sawmill, didn't you? That's where I went over in Europe. We went to the sawmill.
I did that for about 2 weeks, and I said, the hell with that stuff. I burned gas.
Okay.
That's just too much work.
Over in Europe, we went to the sawmill about once every 6 weeks or so.
Well, yeah, you can do that, but you still got to go out there and cut trees down. And then
people
talking about the carbon content. Well, if you don't like the carbon content, grow more trees. Trees like carbon dioxide. It helps them to live. It's food for them. Look at the Sahara. The Sahara could use some trees. It used to be covered in trees.
The Sahara Forest.
The Sahara Desert over in Africa. People are taking advantage of the predicament that Africa is in its village is because that the countries are not developing power-generating plants the way they should be. And there's a reason for that, get back to it again, is that you can't sell the empty pockets.
Well, touche. You're right, you can't sell to an empty pocket.
Yeah. So this is coming past, just like insulated heavily insulated homes came and passed. Thermal windows came and passed. It's just a novelty, right, for the time being. The most efficient way to produce electricity is nuclear. When you don't have, well, actually, the most efficient is when you can build a hydroelectric dam. And if you got a river that's flowing, that hey, that's a good source. Water is flowing.
In every city,
it
ain't on a river.
Then you go to nuclear. Or you utilize your gas and use steam turbine. Why did
what do you think about geothermal?
Geothermal can be used, too. Mm-hmm. I wouldn't be drilling down to the core of the earth. What happened if you cooled the earth off?
Well, I know they use it in Iceland. How much they use in Iceland, I don't know. I don't know the percentage.
Because of the conditions that they are there. So you can't set up towers in some of those countries where they had that same problem as China, where they was taking railroads and they had to build railroad trestles or bridges. And they had to, you couldn't get down below the permafrost. And when the ground freezes and cools, it heaves and holds, because things go up and down. Mm-hmm. They had that problem with the foundations of homes, unless they build them particularly. But when the ground freezes, it heaves and holds, and it causes cracks in your foundation. Thermal is okay, but there's some homes in West County, I think one or two that use a thermal where they bore holes and put a special cylinder that contains a liquid that heated up because of the earth's temperature, and they take that heat off that liquid up at the surface and turn it into hot air to heat your home. Then you got to have something to cool your home in the summertime. You can do
that
too by you can lace pipes back and forth in your yard down so far where the temperature is usually the same all the time. And if your temperature is 60 degrees and you wanted to heat your home, you only got to heat the air approximately 15 degrees to get to about 75 degrees. Rather than taking it from the outside air, where if it's 20 degrees outside and you want to heat your air to 75, you got to go up to 55 degrees. That's going to require more energy.
True. Well, Pianki, we're going to cut it short today. We got a guest tomorrow, and I'm gonna just play the Claude Anderson intro tomorrow and cut out the rest of the stuff.
All right.
Talk to you tomorrow and have a good rest of the day. Everybody else, have a good rest of the day. Tune in tomorrow because we got a very special guest.